Good morning and welcome to the third quarter Friedberg conference call. I'm David Rothberg, and I'm pleased to have with me this morning Al Friedberg. Good morning, Al.
Good morning, David.
Just a few little bits of housekeeping before we start. We're going to be speaking for about 45 minutes, and when we're done, we'll post this call on both the Friedberg and the Niagara websites. Most of the questions have been sent to us by investors in the Global Macro and the Asset Allocation Funds. If during the course of the call you have questions that you'd like to put to Al, please send them to me at erothberg@niagaracapital.ca. That's erothberg@niagaracapital.ca. Okay, I think that covers it. Let's get right to it. The first question comes from an investor, Al, who asked us about the global macro not being any longer short Australian banks and taking quite a loss on them in the process. You know, I think in the main, as investors will note from having received the fourth quarter report, the portfolio is made up of a lot of old and familiar faces. The one missing face is the Australian banks, and it was quite a hit that you took. It's left you quite largely positioned to the long side. How are you feeling now about not having a short position to act as a bit of a hedge? And is it have you come to the conclusion that the conditions that put you into that short position no longer prevail?
Right. So can you hear me well, David?
I beg your pardon. Yes, I can.
Yeah, okay. Well, yes, the Australian bank short position was not put on as a hedge, really, to the portfolio, but was put on as a position that has its own dynamics, fundamentals, and reason to be, even if we didn't want to hedge the portfolio. It has not changed a great deal. The fundamental picture has not changed a great deal. We have house prices that have far outpaced the growth of incomes. The Australian consumer is heavily indebted, very heavily indebted, and we have begun to see an increase, a slight increase, it's happening now every quarter of non-performing loans, despite the fact that unemployment has remained at low levels. The picture, the overall picture, remains the same. The market is heavy. What changed a little bit, and this is why we had to move out, was that the election brought in a government that the market had not expected that they would come in, the Conservatives, and then some of the unfriendly business policies and measures, and actually some stimulating again the purchase of homes by reducing or by eliminating the artificial interest rate, minimum interest rate that banks had to consider before making a loan. So that and the fact that the Reserve Bank of Australia has moved to lower rates again, to getting very close to zero, made mortgages once again very cheap. And so it stimulated a new wave of buying. I don't believe that we will see new highs in prices in Aussie homes, but we have seen much more activity in the market ever since the election. So banks remain still a favorite holding primarily for retail investors who like their dividends. We still think that the banks are overexposed to mortgages. They are paying out a very high proportion of the earnings. It's only a matter of time before they will have to start taking larger losses on those loans. As I said, non-performing loans are creeping up. and it will have an impact on their dividend payouts, and will therefore have an impact on the share prices. So we do plan to get back to this market, but as everybody understands in the audience, it is very difficult to fight, well, I shouldn't call it fight City Hall. It is difficult to fight central banks that are now convinced that it's in their control, it's in their hands to control the economy, to guide it, to cushion it, to bail out bad lenders and bad borrowers. They will come back and back again and back again to lower rates, and in some cases have engineered negative rates. So it is difficult to stand in front of that. Eventually, they will have to stop this nonsensical monetary policy, and we can talk maybe later on about why. But until they stop, I think it's difficult to put on any kind of short position practically today across the board. So yes, we do plan to get back to the Australian bank market. We're watching it daily, watching it very closely, and hope to get back there. We believe that the profit potential is very large.
Okay, thank you. Speaking about home builders, or continuing along the theme of home builders, I think readers of the quarterly report must have been very surprised to learn that at the time of publication, you were no longer long home builders. You've since re-entered the position. Can you talk a little bit about your juggling act there?
Yeah, right. So that actually that shows that the consumer, to some extent, the consumer is pretty tapped out. Let me just take this back for a moment. We are central banks, by lowering rates, are stimulating a lot of anticipated purchases. And so we had a lot of that in the housing market with a very low inventory, which produced an increase in prices, a substantial increase in prices over the past 5 years. That increase in prices ate into demand. And so there was a period of time, starting sometime in 2018, that we saw a substantial, significant slowdown in sales. And we waited a few months and continued to watch it and noticed that the consumer was unable really to continue their buying, even though the pent-up demand is large, but prices had risen too far out of range for the consumer to buy, especially the low entry prices, the low entry level, the cheaper homes. And that's where the cycle begins, at the low end. We finally thought that this cycle will have ended. This is typical that during a cycle, home builders do have a significant up move, but the cycle was ending. We were coming close to we are in late cycle and we're coming close to the end maybe, and nothing was happening. And of course, the consumer could no longer buy these homes. So we said, well, we'll probably have to wait until the next recession, and then maybe prices will stabilize, and then coming out of that next recession, we'll see consumers buy and satisfy their pent-up demand. What happened was something very unusual, that in a period of 6 months, interest rates dropped very, very quickly and very unexpectedly. And we saw mortgage rates go from 5.25% to about 3.8 in a period of 6 months. And so here we have another example of consumers that cannot afford to buy something, but if money is cheap enough, they will buy it. And so we noticed that the lower rates, the lower mortgage rates were attracting an increasing amount of consumption of purchases, and that's when we decided to step back in. I have to say that it is not going to be, it cannot be very long-lived because it is dependent on extremely low levels of interest rates. However, if mortgage rates can stay below 4%, I think the move can still have a way to go. It's hard for us to tell where their rates are going now, though we'll discuss that maybe later. But we think that there's a 3-6 months of an upside in those markets. Again, provided that we don't have a sharp rise in rates in between.
Okay. The other familiar faces are, of course, long Greek banks, long gold and short the yuan. Let's deal with each of those in sequence, beginning with the Brazilian, with Brazil. You've been pretty steady with Brazil. You had a brief separation, but then you went out on a date again and found each other, and now you're kind of resolutely together. How are you feeling about Brazil there, especially as the political climate is percolating in your favor now?
Very good, very good. I think that they're coming through with the changes that they expected to make. This week they passed a pension reform. It will save them $800 billion over the next 10 years. It's a lot of money. It was watered down a little bit, but not as badly as we were afraid originally. Earlier on, the original proposal was for $1 trillion of savings. It came out to $800 billion, which is not bad. So that piece is in place now. Other things are coming into place. Privatizations are coming into place. Congress, which is a very raucous and a very divided and a very parochial in some cases, Congress, but they've been able to get together and pass the most important pieces of legislation are needed. So privatizations are on the way. Guedes, the super finance minister, has been given all the power to do whatever he wants, basically. Bolsonaro has delegated to him all economic policy, and he's a very pro-free market man, and he's moving in many different directions every day, and I believe that it will result in very strong recovery for Brazil, with, by the way, very low inflation, lower than expected inflation. So we're very, very excited about prospects in Brazil. Market has been reacting properly, which is good. It's been moving up, and I think we'll be seeing much more of that in the next few months. Going to Greece, I think there also the recovery is taking shape, not only on the fiscal side, but even on the banking side. Banks are able to dispose of some of their problematic assets, non-performing assets, and they're selling them, and they are making deals, and now the government is providing another avenue with which they can dispose of their assets by packaging them and selling them to investors, and then keeping the senior portion and of the non-performing assets, and getting some guarantee from the government after paying a fee. So they're in essence, they'll be holding good assets. The program, the disposal program, the recapitalization program is going on. The real estate market, which the Greek banks have actually accumulated a very large amount of real estate now in foreclosures, the real estate market is improving day by day. The economy is improving. The economy is probably the most dynamic economy of all the European economies today, with positive rates of growth, budgetary surplus, very large debt, no question about it. The debt, I think, equals 180% of GDP, but the rate of interest on that debt is fixed at a very low rate. I mean, we're talking about rates of interest of less than 2%, 1.5%. The Greek government itself has gone out. And borrowed 10-year money at 1.5%. In fact, sometimes at rates are lower than what the U.S. can borrow. So that shows the change that's taken place in Greece in the past year. So again, here too, we are very bullish. We think these banks, it's not as if these banks will make a lot of money in extending credit, because that, I believe, is a problem that all banks have, all European banks, all international banks have. Markets are bypassing them. The banking model seems to be obsolete. It's not a great business to be in. It's very regulated. It requires a lot of capital. So it's not a great business to be in. But what's mostly happening here is an asset-based recovery. These banks are, as I said, recapitalizing slowly. Their assets are becoming better. Their assets are improving every day. And many of their assets that were written off are starting to become valuable. So here we have a situation where we believe that this recovery in asset values will lead to a still substantial move. We believe that it's hard to calculate these numbers, to know what the price book of these banks, but we believe that they are still selling today at around 30 to 35 cents, and that they are probably heading towards something like 75, 80 cents of book in an improving book environment. So there is a lot of upside still there.
And what about what about European banks in general? Because there's a twin play there.
They're trading in the area of 75 to 80 cents a book, but many of them are loaded with bad assets and assets that are not getting any better, especially the Italian banks and some of the French banks.
What is the outlook for those banks, though?
Not great. Not great. I don't think that they won't make a good investment at all. Generally speaking, we're not very bullish on the banking business. It's a business that today is, as I said before, highly regulated, requires a lot of capital, margins are very small. They're competing with market types of financing that have developed. They bypass them, and they bypass them very often. So it's not a good business, and we would not be looking at banks were it not for the fact that, in at least in the Greek case, we're talking about an asset play, a recovery of the asset values.
Okay, so you're not expecting the European banks to increase. You're expecting a shrinking of the ratios between book values of the of the Greek banks relative to the other European banks.
Yeah, right. We think that they will approach European levels. If they do, that itself implies a 100% move. And if you superimpose on that the fact that assets are improving too, it's easy to see a 200% move in some of these banks. So I think that that's what we're looking at. We're looking at a very substantial recovery.
Okay, let's move on to the Chinese yuan. It's a position that you've had for a while. It was a position that for many, many felt would not be realized because no one expected the yuan to break seven. You put on a short position via buying puts. The yuan weakened. It fell to 717. Now it strengthened to 707, and it sat there in a rather flat way. What's your feeling about the yuan, and what's the cost of the fund of that option if the yuan continues to strengthen or doesn't move from here?
Right. So when we took the position, it was a, let's call it, a very unpopular type position. I believe that the great majority of market participants were not expecting the yuan to break seven. and it would continue to trade at the 685, 695 range. The we made a case that the Chinese slowdown, which is turning into almost like a recession, at least a recession in their terms, would necessitate a devaluation of the currency on the normal conditions, especially as monetary policy swung to a very easy posture. So easy monetary policy is associated with, and decline economic activity is associated with a falling currency. So we thought that the natural thing would be for the currency to fall. It turns out that it's not as simple as that, if only because it's very mixed up with politics. So what you're talking about is the trade war and where China stands in the trade war and how it deals with the U.S., how it deals with the U.S., and the reluctance and at least the opposition that they're facing from the U.S. For Chinese to devalue. So it's now become a bit of a football, a political football, rather than being an economic or financial event, which normally would be in a case of, it could even be in a case of Sweden or Norway, or which I've seen their currencies come down, or Argentina or Brazil or any of these countries. What is happening now is this is part of a package, a political package and a trade-off. And so it's very hard for us to know whether the Chinese made a commitment of sorts. Did they make a commitment to stabilize the currency? Did they make a commitment to stabilize the currency? Did they not? We don't really know. I don't think anybody knows. And so the currency has not been very stable for the past, I'd say, 2 weeks in the 708, 709, 707 area. And we're not sure. I mean, our options still have some time to run, and we still think that should the situation not get any better, and should the trade war, I would call the trade war, sort of end here, but end without going back to the original, just with higher tariffs and so on, it may very well be that the Chinese will have to let the currency go lower and possibly devalue. It's hard for them not to do so, given the economic condition, given the contraction. So we will still maintain the position. Now, you ask me, what's the cost? Well, because it's an option position, our cost today is maybe around in the area of 2%, 2.5% of assets. That's what we stand to lose. It should not fall any further. So we think it's worth the risk now, worth the cost. But unfortunately, what started to be an economic call, it became mixed up with a tit for tat political package, and so it's hard to disentangle these things and say that now we have a pure play on the financial side.
Thank you. The Global Macro Fund enjoyed a good run on its gold position, earned almost 500 basis points after the breakout above 1365, a number that you called for seems like years. The Asset Allocation Fund, while it's not long bullion, is long gold miners. Where are you at with gold? What do you think is going to happen with gold over the next 12 months?
You know, we like gold, although we're out of the market at the moment, took a profit and position, but we still like it. The problem with the market is that it became a very crowded trade. It makes so much sense, and it's so easy to list the reasons why you want to be long gold, that it attracted a very large amount of what we call spec positions, and that doesn't make for a good background for another further rise. Of course, we would not go short this market, and we wouldn't deny the fact that it could easily run up again. We think that it needs a little bit of time to work off this spec position, and we plan to get back. The asset allocation fund has retained its mining position, gold mining position, because these mines the mining business, the gold mining business, consolidating, and that's putting a floor under the market. These companies are now the surviving companies are making a little bit of money at these prices. So anywhere above $14.50, these mining companies do well. And we'll continue to do well. As far as when we go back into bullion, when we're watching the market, I can't tell you now. We certainly will be back on the long side soon.
Okay, thank you, Al. I think that covers basically the basic positions of the. I mean, just worth noting, and please confirm this for me. You while you're no longer long the bullion in the asset allocation fund, you still do hold gold mining stocks.
Right. That's correct.
Right. Okay. So having gone over the individual positions of the portfolio now, both the asset allocation and the global macro fund, let's talk about some, so to speak, macro positions about the trading performance in general. One investor writes saying that the discrepancy between the performance of the asset allocation fund, which is up close to 15%, and the global macro fund, which is down about 18%, speaks perhaps to hedge funds in particular, or hedge funds in general, and global macro hedge funds performance in particular. Is the model, this investor wants to know if the model of being heavily leveraged with both long and short positions is still a functioning model. Another investor has written asking, given the poor performance of the asset allocation, or rather the global macro fund, if you're reconsidering examining markets in the fundamental ways that you have been over the course of your career. A third investor has asked you, has sent you a note saying that we've been experiencing a very benign financial climate. It's true, financial conditions have been very favorable for stocks. We have a very favorable risk, equity risk premium, very low volatility, not just of equity performance, but very low volatility of economic reports, which is a very positive thing for equities. Is the whole model different? Is there anything that I guess really the question that all three are asking, is there something that is looming, something that you can see on the horizon that can break this cycle that's made it so difficult for you, in particular in your global macro, your leverage fund, which allows you to go short? Is there something, or is there something that you yourself are looking to change about the way you approach the global macro fund?
Okay, those are fair questions, and those are the types of questions we ask ourselves every day. But let me start by saying that hedge funds, the mandate of a hedge fund is to look for long positions and short positions, and to maintain literally a hedge book, which means, you know, long and short, and not lose money on major moves. So when you're looking back and it's been a 10-year bull market, it's very hard to outperform a long only fund because you are going to be short, and the proof is that nearly every hedge fund has underperformed the S&P. Well, they have underperformed because they have been short. So now the question is, does it pay to be short? And And now we come back to this new phenomenon that has taken place, especially in the last 15 years, where government has become a major player in the market, either by way of either fiscally, but most importantly, from a monetary point of view. They have come to the help of the economy. They have come to the help of debtors. They have lowered rates again and again and again. We've had a 40-year bull market in bonds, 4 years, 1982, the last peak in interest rates. And since 1982, rates have come down. And the rate utilized by central banks, their Fed fund rate, for example, has gone down to the lowest levels ever. In Europe, we have a phenomenon where central bank rates are minus and negative. So is the case in Japan. So what is happening is what has changed is that governments are not willing to have any to undergo any pain. We want the economy to float, even at the cost of saving inefficient agents, economic agents, saving them. So the economy has more and more inefficient, or what we call almost zombie companies, companies that can literally not exist, but because they're paying so little on the debt, they're able to still survive. So it makes the life of a hedge fund manager very difficult. He's got to look for shorts. He wants to look for shorts. He has some rationale why certain things should not do well and why certain things should go down. He's a player in the allocation, in the resource allocation picture, in the overall resource allocation picture. He's a player. He wants to make sure in his own way, he wants to make sure that money gets allocated to productive enterprises and gets taken out of non-productive enterprises. But central bank activity and their manipulation of interest rates do not allow for that to happen, and repeatedly do not allow that to happen. So now the question is, well, if that's the case and if that's the environment, why not give up on that? Why not say, well, let's go with the flow, and this is what will continue to happen, and governments will continue to come in and save the inefficient, and why look for any short position? And this has been our own struggle as we once examined that number of years back, whether the asset allocation was doing better, should we just stay long and just look for long opportunities rather than long and short opportunities. And we didn't come to a decision at the time, but I'm just giving one example. It may happen, and it did happen, that you rely on governments to come in and save the day, and then it comes to a point where they're no longer able to do that. So that's one possibility. They're no longer able to do that. And we'll discuss why that happens, why they're no longer able to do that. Or it may happen that they decide that they will not do it. For example, in 2008, the government at first looked like it was going to bail out failing companies and failing financial companies, and they did intervene in the Bear Stearns case and made sure that it was absorbed and there was no losses. And then came Lehman, and the market thought, well, you know, Big Daddy will make sure that Lehman doesn't go under. And everybody bet very heavily that, you know, here's another bailout. But it didn't happen. For some reason, the government decided to get tough, and they didn't do it. And when they didn't do it, all hell broke loose. And then we know what happened. The markets caved, dropped 40-50%, and there was a panic, and then we needed to do some more bailing out as a result of that. But during that period, it was a very painful period. So the question is, the issue is, you may want to follow the government and say, yes, they will come in and they will be there, and I can always count on them, but the truth is that you cannot always count on them. Sometimes somebody comes in, a Volcker can come in, like Paul Volcker of the early 80s, and say, I'm not saving anybody. I just want to make sure that the economy recovers, gets rid of all the inefficient purchasers, all the inefficient agents, and clean up balance sheets, And then we lay the foundations for a sustained advance, which is what he did. So if you have people like that coming in from time to time, then a policy of just being long always will not work. Now, I mentioned before, can it happen that the governments will not be able to? That's another question. Willingness is one thing. Capability is another one. Can it come to a situation where the governments will not be able to? And here the answer is unequivocally yes. It can. And the way it does is when this policy, this easy money policy, finally does what it always did historically, creates a rise in prices, an acceleration in rising prices, what we call inflation, and it creates an acceleration. When we do have inflation, of course, everybody, we have a 2% or 1.5% inflation. I'm talking about accelerating inflation. And inevitably, money, the quantity of money, will create inflationary conditions. And so when that happens, when that happens, and it can come as a surprise. It came as a surprise in the early 70s. We were not running a very high rate of inflation. Suddenly it came as a surprise, I believe in 1971, when there was the big Russian purchase of wheat. The price of wheat took off, investment psychology changed, inflation psychology changed, and prices began to rise very, very rapidly. We can't tell when that will happen, but the conditions of that to happen are already in place. In the past 6 months, we have seen money, which has been growing very moderately for years, from 2009, 10, 11, even after QE, for technical reasons, money had not grown very rapidly. It was growing at a modest pace, somewhere in the area of 4.5% to 6%. In the past 6 months, money growth has accelerated, and it's now in the 7% to 9% range, and it still looks like it's accelerating further. If that continues, and if it begins to affect inflation, and again, it's not if it affects inflation, when it affects the rate of inflation, then governments will be impotent to act. Central banks will be to lower rates, they will have to raise rates. And it's at that point that all these markets, all these assets that have been priced as if the 10-year rate will stay below 2% forever, will have to be repriced. And the repricing can be very painful. That's where hedge funds can do well. And sometimes hedge funds are a little bit hasty, and I must say that I have been very hasty, much too hasty, trying to anticipate that point. And therefore, I should have said, well, I don't see yet any sign. Why don't I just stay long and forget short positions? And of course, in hindsight, that would have been the perfect thing to do. But I do think that there is a place in investor portfolio to be invested with hedge fund managers. There is a place. It cannot be, it should not be 50% allocation. That should not be. But it should be some percentage, which is more than just trivial, more than 5%, and probably in the 20 to 30% range. There should be some exposure to something that can happen that will change the picture, or that can change the picture dramatically. It's now very quiet. It's now very, we have a very benign environment, as you said. It's very quiet. It's very comfortable. These kind of environments can change suddenly. And it's at that point that investor needs to have some kind of exposure to that event or to those events.
Well, that's, I think, a perfect ending to the call. It's the last question that we have. I can't resist asking you, though, if before I let you go, if the possibility of a Warren presidency or a progressive presidency on the Democratic side of any sort might, in your opinion, result in a government that was less protective or perhaps more protective of financial institutions in the wake of some kind of a crisis. Can you see Elizabeth Warren being quite so determined to lowering rates and to guard people, or do you think that she would be, on the contrary, saying, no, you guys are going to have to eat crow?
No, I think you're right. I think the only thing is that a Warren presidency is something that at least it's in the open. It's being discussed. It's not a trivial possibility. I believe that the market can, given that, the market can begin to discount it. And maybe that's the reason why stocks haven't made any progress in 2 years. Maybe that's the reason why stocks in the U.S. have not made progress in 2 years, because the market is starting now to think it's possible that we can have a Warren presidency. So yes, she certainly will not be good for the corporate sector. She may help the lower classes, maybe the consumer, the lower classes, but the cost of running business will increase substantially. The regulations will increase substantially. So chances are, that her presidency would not be good for the market. So yes, and the market can actually adjust to that. And between now and next November, the market will begin adjusting. It's a calculating machine, and will begin adjusting to that. I'm more concerned, and I think investors should be more concerned, with what he doesn't see, what is not in front of his eyes, what is not in a conversation, what people are not speaking about. And clearly inflation is not a subject that anybody's speaking about today. It's assumed that inflation will remain the same as it's been for the last few years, benign, and it's assumed that interest rates will remain very low. So those things can change, and those things can change overnight. Now, going back to the Warren presidency or potential Warren presidency, the market will calculate it, and at some point the market will decide that, you know, what are the odds of it to happen. And so you have enough time, probably enough time, to take action if you want to protect yourself. To me, the much greater risk is something that you don't see. And I think this is where Global macro hedge funds can make a contribution. And maybe it means reallocating funds to other areas, to other parts of the world. Although I have to say the U.S. is so large that that unfriendly climate in the U.S., unfriendly economic climate in the U.S. will have an impact worldwide. So it's going to be hard to escape it.
Okay, Al, thank you very much for your time. Investors, clients, listeners, thank you very much for your time. Once again, the call will be posted on the Friedberg and the Niagara website. I'll take the opportunity to wish you good luck in the coming quarter. And again, thanks for the explanations.
Okay, good. Let's have a good quarter. Thank you, David.
Have a good quarter. Goodbye, all.
Bye-bye.